I want you to picture a file, just a tiny, almost insignificant digital file.
Right, like something you wouldn't even normally notice.
Exactly, 15 kilobytes. To put that in perspective, that is, roughly the size of a really low-resolution thumbnail image.
Or maybe like a few seconds of highly compressed audio.
Yeah.
It really is almost nothing.
It's nothing. And yet, last week, this 15 kilobyte JavaScript library called Pretext drops on GitHub, and within 72 hours, it racks up 13,000 stars.
Which, I mean, in the open source world is an absolute earthquake. Things just do not go that viral that fast.
Unless they're solving a massive problem,
Yeah,
right?
exactly. Unless it's a problem that has been causing widespread, deep pain for developers everywhere.
So, how does a file the size of a, low-res thumbnail solve a problem web developers have been screaming about for 3 decades?
It is a wild story. It
Yeah.
really is.
Today, we are diving into exactly that. Our mission for this deep dive is to unpack why something that sounds as painfully boring as, bear with me here, measuring text height is actually a 30-year-old architectural debt.
A debt that has basically held the internet back in a lot of ways.
Right, and solving it. Well, it unlocks these crazy new user interface designs, forces us to rethink how we build AI tools, and even gives us a preview of how software itself will be written in the very near future.
It connects to so many different areas.
It really does. So whether you are a hardcore front-end coder or just someone who uses apps every day and, wonders why your social media feed sometimes stutters and jumps around when you scroll, this deep dive is going to completely change how you look at the digital text on your screen.
The origin of this whole massive shift really traces back to a single developer, a guy named Cheng Liu.
Oh, right, the React Motion guy.
Yes, exactly.
Yep.
He's a highly respected engineer. He was behind tools like React Motion and Rescript, and currently he's over at Midjourney.
So he definitely knows what he's doing.
Oh, absolutely. He deeply understands how the web moves, how things render, and all those friction points that just slow everything down. And he set out to solve a problem that sounds almost like a joke when you explain it out loud.
Which is just figuring out how tall a paragraph is going to be before you actually put it on the screen.
Exactly. Just measuring text.
I was trying to think of a way to visualize how insane the web's default method for this is. And it feels a bit like, well, imagine you want to know if a new couch will fit in your living room.
Okay, I'm following.
Normally, you take a tape measure, you measure the space, measure the couch, and see if the numbers align.
Right. That's the logical way.
But on the web, it's like the only way to measure the space is to literally buy the couch, carry it into your house, and force your entire house to structurally shift around to accommodate this new item.
You physically move the walls.
Yeah, the walls, the roof, the other furniture, you force it all to shift. Then you measure the couch, and if it doesn't fit, you take it back out, and the whole house violently shifts back to normal.
That is actually a perfect analogy.
Yeah.
That shifting of the house is what we call a layout reflow in web development.
And it's incredibly heavy, right?
Oh, it is arguably one of the most expensive, resource-heavy operations a web browser can possibly perform. Because CSS layout, which is the language that styles the web, is globally coupled.
Meaning everything is connected.
Yes, it cascades. If you insert a block of text just to see, how tall it is, the browser has to recalculate the position of that text, the box around it, the container holding the box, the sidebar next to it.
Just a massive chain reaction.
Exactly. All the way up the document tree.
So if I'm building a chat app or an email client or like a social feed, something with a virtual list where I have hundreds of messages I haven't even scrolled down to yet, I am in big trouble.
You're in terrible trouble.
Because I need to know how tall they are so the scroll bar works correctly, right? So the app doesn't just jump around randomly.
Right. But if you measure them the default way, inserting them one by one, like bringing in those
Oh, my
couches,
app is going to stutter like crazy.
yeah, you trigger what Paul Irish, he's a famous web performance engineer, called the forced synchronous layout problem.
It forced synchronous layout.
Exactly. You are effectively forcing the house to rebuild itself hundreds of times a second just to measure the couches. So your app drops frames and it just feels incredibly sluggish to the user.
Which is wild because this limitation seems so glaring, especially since native applications solved this ages ago. Like, if you build a native app, this is a total non-issue.
Well, completely. If you are coding for iOS, measuring text height without rendering it is literally a one-liner.
Wait, really? Just one line of code?
One line. And it has zero side effects. The layout engine in iOS is an independently queryable module. You ask it a question, it gives you an answer, and nothing on the screen moves.
Wow. What about Android?
Android has something similar called static layout. Flutter have Text Painter. Basically, every major native platform looked at text measurement and recognized it needs to be a standalone mathematical operation.
But the web never did. Why on earth did the engineers behind the web leave us with this massive architectural debt?
Well, to be fair, we have to look at the context of 1994.
Right, the very early days.
Yeah. The web was essentially designed as a digital filing cabinet for CERN physicists to exchange academic documents.
Just plain text and maybe a few links.
Exactly. You loaded a physics paper, you read it from top to bottom. The layout engine was designed to cascade globally because the document was just a single static flow.
They weren't building Twitter in 1994.
No, they never anticipated a world of infinitely scrolling, 60 frames per second interactive applications. But because the web values backward compatibility above almost everything else,
that 1994 decision just became permanently baked in.
Precisely. We've been living with it ever since.
Which brings us back to last week. This tiny 15 kilobyte file manages to somehow bypass that 30-year-old flaw, and developers are calling it a backdoor.
A backdoor is the perfect word for it.
But this is where I am genuinely stuck. Pretext apparently circumvents the DOM entirely by routing through the Canvas API.
Right.
But Canvas is a drawing API, isn't it? Like, we use it to render graphics and build browser games. It just draws pixels. How does a drawing canvas know anything about how words wrap inside a paragraph?
That is the exact blind spot that kept this backdoor hidden for decades. No one thought to look there.
So what's the secret?
The genius of pretext is realizing there's a shared dependency deep inside the browser's architecture. The Canvas API and the DOM rendering engine actually share the exact same underlying font engine.
Oh, wow. I had no idea.
Yeah, but here's the kicker. Canvas operates totally outside the layout tree.
So it's not connected to the walls of the house?
Exactly. If you use the command canvas.measureText, it uses the browser's true font engine to measure the text, but it triggers absolutely zero reflow.
Because you aren't putting the text in the house, you're measuring it out in the driveway.
That is exactly it. You're out in the driveway. But you actually just touched on the exact hurdle Cheng Lu had to overcome.
Ooh, what's that?
Well, Canvas doesn't know how to word wrap.
Oh, right, because it's just drawing graphics.
Yeah. Canvas can measure a long string of text, but it doesn't know about line breaks or max widths or any of the complex ways text actually flows into a paragraph.
So to use the driveway analogy, Canvas can measure a really long plank of wood, but it can't tell you how that wood will look when it's chopped up and built into a chair.
That's a great way to put it. So Cheng Lu had to build the logic to accurately chop the text up himself.
Which introduces a whole new layer of complexity, I imagine, because figuring out where a word ends isn't as simple as just looking for a space, is it?
Not at all. What happens when you're dealing with languages like Japanese or Arabic?
Right. Chinese, Japanese, Korean. They don't use spaces the same way English does.
Exactly. And then you have bidirectional text like Arabic or Hebrew. You have emojis, which...
Oh, emojis are a nightmare.
They really are. They're often multiple characters combined into one under the hood. You also have soft hyphens.
So how did he solve that without making the library huge?
This is where pretext splits its workload into two phases. They call it the cold path and the hot path.
Okay, let's break those down. What's the cold path?
For the cold path, which only runs once, pretext takes your text and uses a built-in browser tool called Intel Segmenter.
Oh, so it's already in the browser?
Yes. And this tool natively understands all of these complex, locale-aware word boundaries.
Uh-huh.
Pretext uses it to segment the text perfectly, then measures each of those segments on the canvas and caches the widths.
Okay, but calculating complex languages across thousands of segments sounds really heavy. Does doing this all in Canvas actually save time compared to just letting the browser render it the old way?
Massively. That cold path preparation phase, it takes about 19 milliseconds for 500 texts.
19 milliseconds, that's pretty fast.
It is, but the real magic is the hot path.
What happens there?
Once those widths are cached, if the user resizes their browser window or turns their phone sideways, pretext doesn't need to measure the text all over again.
Because it already has the numbers.
Right. It just runs pure arithmetic over those cached widths. It mathematically emulates the browser's own word wrap algorithm just by adding up numbers.
So how fast are we talking for the hot path, if 19 milliseconds was the slow part?
For those same 500 texts, it drops up to an astonishing 0.09 milliseconds.
Wait. Seriously?
Yeah, 0.09 milliseconds. It is a 200 times speed up.
That's practically instantaneous.
It really is.
Okay, speed is incredible, obviously, but accuracy is the make or break metric here, right? If it's super fast, but it tells the application the text is, say, 2 pixels shorter than it actually is, the whole illusion breaks. The layout shifts anyway.
Right, because the whole point is avoiding the shift.
Exactly. So how did they validate that this math was actually perfect?
Oh, they didn't just test it on a few sample paragraphs. They rendered the entirety of The Great Gatsby.
Wait, the entire book?
The entire book across Chrome, Safari, and Firefox. And then they did a pixel-by-pixel comparison against what Pretext mathematically predicted the layout would be.
That is intense.
And it wasn't just English either. They ran public domain documents in Thai, Chinese, Korean, Japanese, and Arabic.
And the result? Flawless math across all of them.
Flawless. Which is an astonishing engineering feat for a file that's only 15 kilobytes.
That blows my mind. But fast math is really just the engine, right? The real story is what this engine actually powers for the user.
Yes, exactly. Removing the friction from text measurement fundamentally changes the internet we interact with.
Let's talk about those user experience wins. We touched on the chat apps and social feeds jumping around. How does Pretext actually fix that on the screen for you and me?
Well, it enables what we call true virtualization.
Meaning what, exactly?
Currently, when you scroll really fast on a web app, the app is either blindly guessing the height of the incoming posts, or it's doing this frantic measure-then-render dance.
Which causes that visible layout shift we all hate, like when suddenly the button you were trying to click just moves down an inch.
Exactly. It's infuriating. But with Pretext, the app knows the exact mathematically perfect height of item number 9,000 before you even start scrolling.
So the scroll bar is perfectly accurate from the start.
Yes. There is zero layout shift. It's just buttery smooth.
I love that. And it also solves a very specific kind of annoying aesthetic problem with chat bubbles, right? Like, have you ever noticed that sometimes a short message leaves a bunch of empty space on the right side of the text bubble?
Oh, yeah. The bubble ends up being wider than the text actually needs it to be.
Exactly.
That happens because CSS literally cannot express the command. Make this container exactly as wide as its widest line.
Yeah.
It just can't do it.
It seems so simple.
I know, but it can't.
Yeah.
But Pretext handles this with something called multi-line shrink wrap. It uses a binary search to find the perfect fit.
Okay, let's break that down for a second. How does a binary search shrink wrap a text bubble?
Think of it like a guessing game where you want to find the exact width. You test the middle point. If the text fits, you cut the remaining space in half and test again.
So you just keep halving the distance over and over.
Right, you keep doing that until the bounding box snaps mathematically tight around the longest word.
And because Pretext is just doing pure math over those cache numbers we talked about, it can run this binary search in, what, fractions of a millisecond?
Exactly. So your chat bubbles, your labels, your notification badges, they all hug the text exactly.
It's aesthetically perfect. And the developer community is already taking this engine and building things that just shouldn't be possible in a browser.
The demos are wild.
They really are. Like, there is a masonry layout, think like a Pinterest board running 100,000 variable height text items at 120 frames per second.
Which would normally melt a browser.
Totally.
Yeah.
And then someone built a demo called Pretext Explosive. Have you seen this one?
Oh, yes. It's amazing.
It turns every single character of text into an independent physics particle that bounces around the screen. Because the library knows exactly where every character should be mathematically, you can just detach them from the grid and apply physics to them.
The illustrated manuscript demo is even wilder to me.
Oh, tell me about that one.
It has this medieval text flowing perfectly and dynamically around an animated moving dragon on the screen.
Wow.
This kind of text around obstacle magazine layout is something the CSS working groups actually tried to implement years ago.
And they gave up.
Yeah, they dropped it because it's just too computationally complex for a globally coupled layout engine.
Yeah.
But now, with Pretext doing all that math in the background, it's actually trivial.
It's amazing. But, you know, this 30-year-old CSS limitation isn't just a quirky front-end issue. It actually exposes a massive philosophical flaw in how we think about software architecture in general.
Yes, absolutely.
There's an analysis by an architect named Yage that frames Pretext in terms of abstractions.
And this is perhaps the most profound takeaway from the entire situation.
How so?
Well, an abstraction in software is simply a way of hiding complex reality behind a simpler interface. Like, a steering wheel in a car is an abstraction.
Right. You turn it left, the car goes left.
Exactly. You don't need to know how the steering column interacts with the axle and the hydraulics. It simplifies things so you can just drive. But Yage points out a golden rule of software. Good abstractions let you choose which layer to work at. Bad abstractions glue all layers together and give you no choice.
So in 1994, hiding the intermediate math of layout seemed like a really great idea. It looked clean, you just write a paragraph tag and the browser handles the rest.
Right, but it glued the layers together. It gave developers no choice. If you wanted the math without the actual rendering, you just couldn't have it.
The W3C, the organization that develops web standards, they knew this was a problem, didn't they?
They did. They designed something called the CSS Houdini Font Metrics API to finally open up that layer. Mm. But here we are in 2026, and no browser has fully implemented it.
That's crazy.
So Chengdu basically built a 15 kilobyte bridge over a gap the standards bodies couldn't cross.
And that need to, as you say, open a window into the intermediate data. That exact philosophy points to a massive mistake we are making right now in the age of artificial intelligence.
It really does. Yage draws a direct parallel between this 30-year-old CSS mistake and how we are building APIs today.
Because we build application programming interfaces for human cognitive bandwidth, right? Like, we like clean facades.
Exactly. If a complex database query fails, we want the API to return a neat little error that simply says, operation failed. It protects our brains from this messy, low-level data dump.
Which is great for us as humans, but what happens when the entity consuming that API isn't a human, but an AI agent?
The clean facade completely breaks the AI.
Because an AI agent learns through tri-feedback correction loops, right? It actually needs that messy intermediate state.
Yes. If you just tell an AI operation failed, it has no idea what to tweak to fix it. It's flying blind. But if you let it observe the low-level mechanics, which is the equivalent of the text measurements we were talking about, it can adjust and learn.
So when you hide the mess behind a clean abstraction, you basically turn the abstraction into a brick wall for AI.
Exactly. And pretext architecture is a vital lesson here. It doesn't tear down the DOM. It doesn't try to replace CSS. It just opens an independent observation window alongside the existing system.
So the lesson is, don't tear down the abstraction, just open a window on it.
Perfectly said.
And what's fascinating is that this philosophy of opening a window is exactly how Chengdu was able to build this tool so incredibly fast.
The development process is a whole other crazy part of this story.
Right, because when you hear about a single developer solving a cross-browser multi-language layout problem, you assume it took years of grueling trial and error.
Oh, the edge cases alone handling Arabic ligatures in Safari versus Chrome. That is the kind of work that burns out entire engineering teams.
But it didn't take years, did it?
No, it took weeks.
Weeks.
It represents a massive shift in modern software development. Chengdu didn't write every line of this by hand.
He used AI.
Yes. He acted as the architect in the quality oracle. But he used AI models, specifically Claude Code and OpenAI Codex, as his implementation engines.
So how did he actually use the AI for this? Because solving a 30-year-old math problem across different browsers doesn't really sound like something you can just casually ask a chatbot to do.
No, you can't just prompt it once. He set up an automated feedback loop. He took the browser's true rendering, like the ground truth of how Chrome or Safari laid out the paragraph, and fed that output directly into the large language models.
So he essentially told the AI, here is the correct pixel layout. Here is the TypeScript logic you wrote. They do not match. Find the discrepancy and rewrite the logic.
Exactly. The AI would iterate, fail, adjust, and iterate again until the math mirrored the pixels perfectly.
He basically treated the AI like an incredibly fast, tireless junior developer.
Yes. The AI provided the throughput, you know, the raw typing and iterating power. But the human provided the architectural insight and the validation methodology.
Right, because the AI didn't invent pretext. It needed the human to say, hey, the Canvas API is our back door. Let's use that.
Exactly. But once pointed in the right direction, it compressed years of coding into weeks.
It is a profound signal of where the industry is headed. The barrier to solving complex, historically deeply entrenched problems has dramatically lowered.
You no longer need an army of engineers to rewrite a foundational piece of the web. You need one brilliant architect with a deep understanding of the system's constraints and an AI to grind through the implementation details.
Wow. Let's unpack everything we've covered today, because this has been a massive journey, starting from a very, very small file.
A lot of ground to cover.
Yeah. We started with a 15 kilobyte JavaScript library that managed to circumvent a 30-year-old architectural flaw in the web's design by sneaking through a Canvas backdoor.
And by routing through Canvas, it bypassed the globally coupled CSS layout, completely eliminating the dreaded layout reflow just to measure text.
Which unlocked things we literally couldn't do before without massive performance hits, like true virtualization with no jumping, mathematically perfect shrink-wrapped chat bubbles using binary searches, and wild dynamic layouts with physics particles and dragons.
But more importantly, it served as a masterclass in software architecture. It proved that good abstractions must let you choose your layer.
Right, and that hiding intermediate states behind clean facades is a really dangerous game, especially as we transition to an AI-driven world that actually requires that intermediate data to learn and function.
And finally, it proved the power of AI-assisted coding. It showed us that when a human provides the vision and the ground truth validation, AI can crunch through impossible problems in record time.
It really is a story about finding backdoors and opening windows.
It makes you wonder how many other impossible 30-year-old problems are just sitting there waiting for someone to find the right backdoor and point an AI at it.
Which brings me to the thought I want to leave you with today. We've talked a lot about the web, about CSS, about code, but think about Yage's architectural lesson in the context of your own life, your own business, or your own workflow.
It applies to so much more than just programming.
Exactly. Where are you relying on a clean facade that is actually hiding the messy intermediate data that you or the tools you use need to truly innovate? Are you glued to a bad abstraction because it feels safe? Or is it time to find your own 15-kilobyte solution and open a window?